BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. It used to be said that access to work was the government's best-kept secret. It was meant as a compliment, the implication that the scheme to provide support to help disabled people get and keep jobs was so valuable to many that it should be better known and boasted about. Well, it's still being said, but with a far more literal implication, that with rumours swirling about proposed cuts, reductions in the kind of support available, lengthening waiting lists for people to be accepted onto the scheme or receive specialist equipment, that the secrecy is real and that it's very difficult to find out what's going on inside the scheme and what its future is. Well, we've certainly been trying, pressed by blind and partially sighted listeners who are fearful of these rumoured changes. Listeners like Martin Conway, who's been a long-term user of Access to Work in his job as a social worker.
I wouldn't be in employment without Access to Work. I've been using the service in various ways since the early 90s. I use it in the way that I have a support worker for 20 hours a week. I've also had some specialist equipment over the years. I'm also allowed to use a travel to and from work scheme. So all of those things obviously contribute and make it possible for me to do the job that I do.
So what about more recently? What have been your experiences with Access to Work lately?
Well, I've noted some changes, Peter, over the years. Originally, certainly in the late 90s, it was organised regionally, as far as I can recall. And we had our own Access to Work advisors. We actually came out to the offices where people worked and actually knew what you did, which meant that when you went back to make another, if you needed to change anything, they had some awareness of who they were actually dealing with. Unfortunately, it was centralised, and that hasn't seemingly improved things. In the last 12 months, I've had a couple of contacts with Access to Work. One was last July when I contacted them to ask for a wage increase for my support worker, which hadn't been increased for quite a few years. And we were just on the point of we're about level with minimum wage. We need to get that up. They told me that was a change of circumstances, which to me sounded like a fairly straightforward thing. And here we are, we're 12 months on, and that conversation hasn't taken place. And then the second contact was last October when, unfortunately, my old Braille note Apex died after many years of service. I needed to replace it, and obviously I'm in a job where I'm full-time, I'm a social worker, a lot of responsibility. And I went to Access to Work first. They said minimum 6 to 9 months for an assessment. What I've had to do is go to my employer, and I'm lucky enough to work for a large organisation and to be already in a job, and managed to persuade them to part with £5,000 to give me the machine, which I'm hoping to reclaim ultimately from Access to Work. But at this point, we're still waiting for the assessment.
And if you had been working for a smaller company, what would have been the implications of that, do you think?
Well, you've got to think people must be losing jobs because, you know, you don't get the help until you get the job. So if you've had an interview and some smaller employer is still, you know, 3-6 months down the line, you've not got your equipment, I would imagine people would be losing jobs.
What do you think is going wrong, Martin?
Clearly, it's not resourced sufficiently. You know, if the government are serious about getting people back into work, and, you know, I've been one of the lucky ones. You know, I'm 57 years old, and I know lots of anecdotal evidence of people a generation younger than me who are visually impaired, who went to university, who have never worked, and are maybe now in their mid-30s. You know, if they don't resource Access to Work properly, it's entirely contrary to what they're actually saying they want to do. And effectively, if they were to cut the service any further, to me, there would be abandoning a generation of visually impaired people to welfare.
Martin Conway. Well, one group which does believe it knows what's happening is the Access to Work Collective. They're a members group made up of users of the scheme, along with support workers, employers and suppliers. They've launched a campaign called Access to Nowhere. Well, broadcaster and disability advocate Dr. Shani Danda is one of the founders of this group. Shani, just explain what you know about changes to Access to Work. We've heard lots of rumours, but what do you know?
So since early 2024, we've noticed a pattern in the way people's awards are being managed. And this includes things like upon renewal, your application is treated like a completely new application. And if you are lucky enough to continue getting support from Access to Work, your award is reduced around 40 to 60%. Your offered rates for support workers that are so low that it is equivalent to paying someone below minimum wage. And then additionally, we have been notified of cuts through whistleblowers from Access to Work, and they leaked these to the press. When we put these to the DWP, they denied them, but there's definitely a pattern, and lots of unofficial cuts have already taken place.
Are these hard facts or still just rumours? Because the government has not confirmed that this is government policy.
So what we do know that are hard facts, which were in the recent Pathways to Work consultation, that at the time of publishing, there were 62,000 people stuck in a backlog waiting for their application to be processed. And when I was in a meeting, I heard directly from representatives from Access to Work that that was now consistently at 65,000 people in a backlog and with 33,000 people waiting to be paid.
What's the aim of your Access to Nowhere campaign? What are you trying to achieve?
We're calling on the government to stop all planned and unofficial cuts to Access to Work budgets and services, and we want them to take immediate action to clear the backlog and to fast-track urgent cases. And then we want a fully co-designed overhaul of Access to Work processes with disabled people and key stakeholders built around the realities of modern work.
Are you talking to them? Are they talking to you?
We're in all the places that we can be to speak to them, but it is very, very difficult. We really hope for more meaningful engagement because, you know, within the collective, we've got people that have helped millions of disabled people in work. We've got people who have used Access to Work since its inception. We've got employers that want to employ disabled people that can't because their support is no longer there. We are the only group of people that represent all Access to Work stakeholders.
Well, we're also joined by another listener who's contacted us about this. At her request, we're just using her first name, Eve. Eve, just explain first your initial experiences with Access to Work, because I think you've had Access to Work for some time.
I was initially diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa when I was 25. And my consultant at the time said, well, prepare yourself. I don't think that you're going to still be in work in your 30s. And I was a single parent in my mid-20s. And I was not given any information about Access to Work back then. That would have been in about 1999 or something.
Yeah. But you did get onto Access to Work in the end.
Yeah, through meeting another blind person who is in work. And it was the way that I was able to start and continue my work as a teacher. And when I eventually had to medically retire from teaching, it was the way that I was able to start my own business and remain in work. And I'm still in work now at the age of 52. Because of Access to Work, I've had a support worker, a reader, I had transport to work, and I've had specialist equipment as well.
So what are your worries now and what have you been hearing?
Well, I work supporting disabled people to stay in work. In all the consultation that was done that ended at the end of June, there was almost no mention of self-employed disabled people. And I'm sure, Peter, that, you know, you'll be very aware through all the brilliant work that In Touch has done that being self-employed and running your own business for some visually impaired people, it's one of the only ways that we might have managed to stay in work. And yet all of the proposed changes and the consultation around those changes are all talking about the issues as if it's all about raising awareness with employers and as if all employers have pockets that are so deep that they could choose to employ a blind or partially sighted person and that they could just shoulder those additional costs and that they would, out of the kindness of their hearts, choose the blind or partially sighted employee over another employee where they had to make no additional payments. As the Access to Nowhere campaign has been so brilliantly highlighting, people who are having new awards put in place, those awards are being based on support worker hourly rates that do not exist. I actually asked an Access to Work advisor where on earth they were getting these hourly rates from, and they said they were Googling support worker and looking for how much agencies were paying support workers, not specialist support workers, just any job title that said support worker. But of course, what an agency is paying a support worker is not the same as it would cost to provide the support or to pay a self-employed support worker.
Well, also trying to find out more about the problems faced by disabled people getting jobs and staying in them is the Commons Work and Pensions Committee itself, made up of MPs from the main parties, which is asking for evidence from a range of people, including blind and partially sighted people, on various questions, including how successful has access to work been and how could it be improved? We had hoped to talk to the committee's chair, Debbie Abrams, about the kind of information they were looking for and about what changes to access to work were already being contemplated. We were told that other commitments would prevent her from talking to us for today's programme. However, we do welcome Steve Darling, Liberal Democrat member of the Work and Pensions Committee, and as many listeners will already know, himself visually impaired. Steve, first of all, tell us about this request for information. What is it that the committee wants to know, and what will the committee do with the information it gets?
As far as what we're asking, in the autumn, we're looking at enhancing employment for people who are disabled back into work, because there continues to be this massive gap between the levels of employment for people with disabilities in our country compared to near neighbours such as Denmark or Germany. So we're keen to explore what's working and what isn't. And people have got until the 29th of September to feed back in to us. It should be a piece of work that is less than 3,000 words. It shouldn't be published elsewhere. And if you're having problems, to be able to send that into the consultation document, then you can reach out through the phone, through the House of Commons, to get some support through the committee section.
But Steve, isn't the purpose of access to work already well known? The issue is, I guess, are the things happening for people that should be happening and appeared to happen in the past?
Exactly. And myself and colleagues have been raising issues around that. We are given some blah, blah, blah explanations. But this is a piece of work that we regularly do investigations, are part of the Select Committee. We're hoping to make sure that this helps influence longer-term government policy around employment. But I share much of the concerns that colleagues have highlighted so far.
And just finally, can I just go back to Eve and say, Eve, what basically do you want to see happen next?
I would like to see some joined up thinking. If we're trying to get disabled people to be able to take part in society and we're trying to get people off out of work benefits, then this needs to be joined up thinking with the access to work system. And it was working. At the beginning of my career, it was the difference between me being a single parent on full benefits for the rest of my life. And what actually happened was that I have always been in full-time work. I could not have worked without it.
Eve, Shani Dander, Steve Darling, thank you all very much indeed. We are continuing to press for an interview with Minister of State for Social Security and Disability, Sir Stephen Timms. Again, he wasn't available to talk to us this week. We are hopeful of a positive answer soon. In the meantime, do continue to send us your views, experiences and questions for the Minister, in case we get the chance to put them to him. Email intouch at bbc.co.uk, leave voice messages on 0161 836 1338. From me, Peter White, and producer Beth Hemmings and our guests, goodbye.